are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. And in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7500.
You are on the line with Lance Daw and Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope it's going well for everybody out there listening. Certainly is for Noah and I here in the studio as the Braves took the pennant over the Dodgers over the weekend. 4-2 was the series final. The Braves advancing to the World Series, I believe, for the first time since 1999. But, yeah, just a fantastic weekend. And in college football, it was just a great weekend in sports overall. Noah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It was before you were even thought of.
Man, it'd be like that sometimes. But, yeah, fantastic weekend in sports. Braves winning. I believe 4-2 was the final, and 4-2 was the series final. Eddie Rosario hitting a three-run bomb to kind of solidify that one. The Braves never looked back after that point. Fantastic series. Stings, Astros are going to be able to facing off against the Braves, I believe, starting on Tuesday. So, yeah, it's going to be a great, great World Series. Sting was just telling me before the show started that he was reading an article that was saying something to the effect. It's like, oh, we don't get the two best teams in baseball, which I just think is ridiculous.
Yeah, one of the most absurd headlines I've ever read, personally.
Yeah, it's stupid because the Braves have the best record since the deadline, I believe. The Astros are consistently one of the best teams in baseball. One of these teams beat the Red Sox. One of these teams beat the Dodgers. So, yeah, it's like complaining when the Lakers lose in the playoffs. It's like, oh, LeBron didn't make it. It's not the best team. Shut up.
Yeah, and they're in the World Series because those two teams are playing the best baseball out of anyone right now, and that's why they're still there.
We're going to get to the Braves later on, but I want to start the show talking about Brian Harsin's press conference. It just wrapped up. Got some notes here for you guys. Didn't really talk a whole lot about what we assumed would potentially be a big topic, which was the vaccine mandate with Auburn University. Brian Harsin said that he's not going to disclose his status, nor is he going to disclose anybody else on the team's status. So he just kind of let that one go. He's like, I've been saying that from the get-go. So that's cool there. Got a little preview on the Ole Miss game. He said Matt Corral was the Heisman frontrunner. Currently in the nation, I would not disagree with him right now. He said the Ole Miss defense is building on a lot of different things. So just a lot of different notes to kind of take from Harsin's press conference.
Here's the thing. If people thought they were going to get something interesting out of today's press conference, I've been saying this all day long, you haven't been paying attention.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Anytime a hot-button issue or anything that people think will be like fascinating to talk about with Brian Harsin, he's going to not even address it. He's not going to, because he doesn't have to. So anything, whether it comes to the mandate or speculation over anything to do with the team, it's like, he's not going to talk about it. He's not going to talk about it. It's just simply not going to happen.
And the philosophy behind that is, let's focus on football. We've got a great game coming up this Saturday. The focus is on football, and there's no reason to create any distractions. So anything that people may have saw on Twitter, wink, wink, anything that people may have thought was going to be talked about in today's press conference, plain and simple, it wasn't. I don't even think some of the things that people thought may have been talked about were even really asked about today. But regardless, you weren't going to get information in this press conference, and you had to expect that going into it because look at how he's handled injuries. And he's basically playing and told people all year long that he's not going to tell you about injuries.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, it's just if he doesn't have to address it, he's not going to. And he even said, it was like, well, our focus is on Ole Miss this weekend. Our focus is on
it's Bill Belichick.
Yeah, exactly. Making sure that we are continuing to get better during the bye week. Something that he said, he was like, we don't have time to take a day off. Even during this bye week, we still have to go out there. We have to practice. We have to continue to improve. It's like, we don't have time to think about these other things or discuss these other things if they don't truly matter, because our focus is on taking down Ole Miss, and it should be because this is a very pivotal game in the SEC West, and it's a very pivotal game in Brian Harsin's first year as a head coach. If I were him, personally, I'd be thinking right now, this is the biggest game of the year so far for me, because if I win this, not only do I win some more loyalty from the fan base, I win down the line looking, getting some motivation, looking at that Iron Bowl and saying, okay, we could be playing for it all. We just have to continue to keep rolling now that we've proven that we can beat a team like Ole Miss. So yeah, absolutely. My focus, if I'm him and me talking about it right now, is on this Ole Miss team and how Auburn's going to perform this Saturday.
Take me through Matt Corral, Heisman front runner. You agree?
Yes, I would agree on that right now. Look, Matt Corral has not been 100% for a couple of weeks now. We saw in that Tennessee game, we saw him rush for over 195 yards, I believe was the total that he had. They used him on the ground. They barely won. 31-26 was the final, but they were able to get over the hump because of his legs. Outside of that, though, so far this season, what he's been doing that he didn't do last year is not turning the ball over. I believe he only has one interception so far this season. He's been playing very efficiently through the air and on the ground. He's at his best, though, like I mentioned, whenever he's using his legs, almost 200 yards rushing against Tennessee. This past weekend, they barely ran him at all. He had 12 attempts, but if you take out the sacks, he had 9 rush attempts, averaged 2.2 yards per carry. He was not a factor in the ground game whatsoever, and they ran for 266 on Ole Miss. So my question heading into this weekend is, while yes, he is a fantastic passer, he does not turn the ball over, he is mobile. This scheme is definitely built around what he's doing right now as a quarterback, and Lane Kiffin is dialing up everything right now, and it's all working. How is he going to look against an Auburn defense that I feel like is more stout than LSU's, and how is he going to look if he can't run the ball with his legs against Auburn? Does Auburn force him to do what they tried to do against LSU, which is drop 8 into coverage, maybe put a spy on Corral and just say, beat us with your arm? And also, Braylon Sanders, one of their deep threats, is still currently out with an injury right now.
Auburn's hopes of beating Ole Miss, and we'll talk about this all throughout the week, so I don't want to get too far into it right here. I still want to talk about more Brian Hartson's press conference today. But Auburn hopes of beating Ole Miss is contingent on Auburn being able to score well into the 30s. Because what we've seen over the last 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks, no, 3 weeks ago it was Arkansas. So the last 2 weeks against Tennessee and against LSU is that Ole Miss's defense, check that, Ole Miss's offense can be contained. It can't be stopped, but it can be contained. If you can hold them into the high 20s, low 30s, which Tennessee and LSU both did, Ole Miss had a pretty poor first half from a scoring perspective, only had 17 points going into the locker room. They got a lot of those points late in the first half. If Auburn can put up a similar type of defensive performance as Tennessee did 2 weeks ago, which I think was a better defensive performance than what LSU did this past week, if Auburn can do that, Auburn can win. Because the Ole Miss defense is not good. It's not good. Right. And Auburn should be able to, with what you saw on the road in Fayetteville, at home, if they truly have taken steps forward in the right direction, which is what was talked about in today's press conference, then Auburn should be able to score into the upper 30s like they did against Arkansas, which should be enough. I'm thinking a close ball game this weekend in Jordan-Hare Stadium, but if Auburn can put up 35, 38 points, something like that, I think Auburn wins. That's the test. It would be really cliche for me to sit here and say Auburn's got to score more points than Ole Miss. Duh, that's how you win football games. But this is going to be a game that is going to feature more points, I think, than some of the other Auburn wins this season that have been a little bit more low scoring at times, like that LSU game on the road. Here at home, it's going to be about Auburn being able to establish offensive consistency and be able to win by scoring, because Ole Miss is going to put up points. I just don't see Auburn being able to shut down everything that they do. Matt Corral put up his second lowest total of pass attempts for the season with 23. He had a second lowest rushing total of the season with just 24 yards, and they still scored 31 points at LSU.
Right.
Or at home, excuse me.
Well, two things that I would say to your point of I think Auburn has a chance to win this game. You look at that LSU game and you look at that Tennessee game. What did Tennessee do that, or Tennessee not do that LSU did? LSU folded in the second half. They really folded in the second quarter if you went back and watched that game. Tennessee didn't fold in that matchup. They kept fighting, and they were in it until the very end, literally until the last pass attempt before Joe Milton ran it out of bounds at the end of the game. But Auburn is a team that's not going to fold. We've seen that time and time and time again so far this season. It's at home. It's in Jordan-Hare Stadium. And on top of that, the other thing is that I think Auburn is a more talented team than Tennessee and LSU. If it was a five-point loss at home for Tennessee in a game that they didn't fold and two plays that they had a chance to win at the very end, what does this look like with a better Auburn defense? It's at home, an offense that can score in a variety of ways if the receivers aren't dropping passes. What does that look like? And on top of Matt Corral not being 100%, because you just said it, he didn't really throw the ball a lot. They didn't use him in the run game. From a yardage standpoint, he wasn't doing a whole lot. That kind of indicates to me that they were trying to get away from him and using him too much, whereas they were trying to rely on Snoop Connor, Jerrion Ealy was back, Henry Parrish Jr., those running backs. They were trying to rely on players outside of him because they were trying to work him back in because he's not still fully healthy.
And he may be 100% going into this weekend, but regardless, he was 100% in the Tennessee game until the end.
By this time Saturday, he should be healthier, right? But I don't think it really changes the game plan a whole lot for Auburn because, sure, he may be able to run the ball. He's not going to get 195 on the ground and convert every single third down against Auburn. Auburn has shown that they will bend, but they won't break, especially late in game. So if Auburn is kind of sitting around that 30-point, 38-point margin, somewhere around there, and they're heading into the fourth quarter either tied or with a lead, I think Auburn's able to take it. But we can speculate over that all weekend. But point being, talking about Brian Harsin earlier today, is like our focus is on that team, our focus is on doing those things, and our focus is on still improving every single day this week, because while we had a bye to work on some things, we still have different things that we need to work on. For instance, the run game was something that was brought up at the very end about whether or not Auburn's going to be able to kind of reestablish that. Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer, by the way, put out a fantastic article earlier today about why Auburn's run game has slowly been just kind of disappearing and what has been working in the run game. So if y'all aren't subscribed to the Auburn Observer, just a random shameless plug, auburnobserver.com, if you want to go read that article. And we'll continue to break down the numbers throughout the course of this week on the show. But the running game, I think, is something really important that Brian Harsin was stressing at the end of his press conference.
More notes from the press conference. Left tackle Austin Troxell expected to be back this week, but Harsin still high up on Killian Zaire in that Arkansas game, and Killian Zaire had a great game against Arkansas a couple of weeks ago.
He did, yeah, absolutely. I will say, while he did have a very good game, and Auburn's pass blocking was phenomenal in that matchup, late in the game, you notice whenever Auburn was trying to establish the run, they were trying to run down the clock. It was right before Bo Nix scored that touchdown on that somewhat of a QB draw. Zaire, if you watched him, it was kind of like he ran out of gas. It felt like he was not out there giving it his all. I feel like in terms of like the push he was getting, he was kind of getting pushed around late in that game. So it's good that you have that depth as a backup to go for 3.5 quarters like Zaire. Who knows, maybe he's ready to go for four quarters for the rest of the season if Auburn needs him. But it's really good that you have that kind of depth at left tackle, a position that has been struggling for the past couple years at Auburn. It's good to have that depth and to have your starter back as well.
Harsin also seems to be pretty high up on this Ole Miss defense, where he said they've pretty much just looked at film on that defensive side of the football heavily over the last couple of weeks, where he says they've improved dramatically.
Look, this Florida defense gave up 321 rushing yards to LSU just a week ago. This week, heading into this game, I thought, well, if LSU wants to run the ball, they're certainly going to be able to do so against what I think is a worse defense in Ole Miss's. LSU then proceeded to run for 77 yards and I believe had less than 2.5 yards a carry. It was not a good day on the ground for LSU. You may also say, well, they don't run the ball. It's like, well, they've also shown the ability to do it against bad defenses. Point being, this Ole Miss defense held up when they needed to hold up against an LSU offense that has shown the ability to run the ball. Auburn has been trying to run the ball all season long, and they've been slowly getting worse at it as SEC play has gone along. I'd like to see that matchup. I think it's really important this weekend. How does Auburn try and run the ball? Can Ole Miss stop it like they did last weekend? I think that's going to be really important.
Auburn apparently also still installing some new schemes, some new ripples in the offense and on the defensive side of the football, things that I love to hear as a student of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that you've been harping on all year so far during the season, Noah, is like, well, we've seen this offense do different things, but I feel like they could show a little bit more. And then the next weekend, we see something where, like, we haven't seen yet that yet. That's something that it's just an extra wrinkle in this offense. And then we continue to move outside, like the sweeps and the play action and the quarterback draws. We've seen them do so many different things. And now as the SEC slate has started, they've kind of been working in that RPO action where the quarterback is a little bit more involved in the running game. And it's becoming more multiple. It's becoming more diverse. And the fact that they're saying we're installing even more different stuff to kind of throw some wrinkles into the offense against this Ole Miss defense, I think is phenomenal. You're going to catch some guys off guard, I think, throughout the rest of SEC play. Are they trick plays? We don't know that yet. But in terms of just the different things that Auburn has not thrown at different offenses so far this year, I think you're just going to see a lot of different things that, in terms of the passing game specifically, that opposing defenses just have not gotten to see from the Tigers yet. And I think, again, that's a very good thing.
Overall takeaway from the press conference today?
Overall takeaway, I think they had a good bye week. I think they were able to rest up. I'm really interested to see. I don't know if anybody asked about Owen Papo and his status, but that's going to be really important to me to see where he's at health-wise before this Ole Miss game. But in terms of the progress that they made through the bye week overall, I think they were doing just fine if Brian Harsin's telling the truth and they were able to make some progression on both sides of the ball. But like you said, you've still got to continue to improve. You've still got a really important opponent this weekend. And I cannot stress enough, we're going to be talking about it for the next 5 days, I cannot stress enough how important this weekend's game is for Auburn to go out there and actually win. So yeah, all eyes on Ole Miss is what I'm getting from this conference.
If anybody thought anything interesting was going to come out of it today, that's my takeaway. It's still the same old Monday media availability. It's about football. It's about the game this weekend. And that's what everybody should be focusing on. And that's the messaging from this Auburn football program. It's about Ole Miss and about Auburn taking the next step. And that Ole Miss game, you're right. You were talking a little bit about this earlier in the segment. This Ole Miss game, it's a stepping stone season for Auburn. You win one game, it opens the door for the next game for you to continue to build momentum and help you achieve your goals. If you lose to Ole Miss this weekend, I still really do like Auburn's matchups against A&M. I still don't think A&M's that good of a football team. I think their record's a little deceiving at this point. But I do think it takes some of the air out of your season if you lose to Ole Miss.
For sure. For sure, yeah, and you talk about momentum being a really important thing whenever it comes to Auburn athletics in general. I think momentum is incredibly important, but yeah, you look at this A&M matchup next week. If you beat Ole Miss, I think you've got a really good shot, and if you lose, I still think they have a good shot, but they've got to be able to kind of rebuild that momentum.
Let's head to a quick break here on the Line. We'll be back in just a moment.
Back on the Line, Lance Dahl and Noah Gardner with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on the Auburn-Ole Miss game, the Braves going to the World Series, or anything going on in the sports world, 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. In this segment, I want to get to some Saturday takeaways. There were some good games across college football this weekend. We'll get to some more upsets later on in the show, but for now I want to keep it in the SEC. Alabama-Tennessee 52-24 was the final in favor of the Crimson Tide. This was a game that if you didn't watch it and you saw the final score, if you're an AP voter, you're like, oh sweet, Alabama rolled, as they have for forever now. They did not. For about three quarters, they did not. This was a game, and I'm really surprised. Tennessee right now, they've been very good in the first quarter of their football games. They've been consistent. They've been able to unleash their game plan violently on opponents. And then after that, they've kind of slowed down. In this game, they were able to hold on for a little bit longer than that against one of the best teams in the nation, arguably at this point in Alabama. They were able to hold on. I believe they had a lead early on in that game, and I tweeted it out, and we were talking about it.
14-7.
It was 14-7 at one point.
They had a lot of momentum.
They really did. We were talking about this in a group chat. Intern Sting, you and I were talking about it. I went and looked. It was the first lead that Tennessee had on Alabama since 2015 when Jalen Hurd, I believe, scored a touchdown run late in that game. And somebody else tweeted out, it's like the first time that anybody's had a lead on, or Tennessee's had a lead on Alabama in the first quarter in like forever. Like forever and ever. So this was a game that, again, on the surface looks like it was a blowout, but do not let the final score deceive you. This Tennessee team is much improved as to where they were last season. Josh Heupel, I feel like if you give him a little bit of time, You let him get his guys in. I think this is going to be a dangerous football team to watch moving forward. And I believe Tennessee was transferless heading into this season, and they lost a bunch of guys in the portal. So it's not like they were working with outside talent. These are guys that were within the program that Heupel is having to work with. What will happen whenever he gets his guys in? What will happen when he gets his recruits in? I'm not saying they're going to beat Alabama 2 years from now. They're going to beat them next year. But I think there's reason to believe that the Volunteers are on the right track.
I don't want to get too far ahead because we've seen that even early on in Derek Dooley's tenure. We saw it early on with Jeremy Pruitt. We saw those coaches have at least the ability to get to a bowl game. And I think we're going to see that with Heupel. You're not wrong. It definitely feels like there is a movement in the right direction. My question about Josh Heupel is defense related. Will this program ever sustain a consistent level of defense coupled with a great offense, or will they just be kind of like Ole Miss? Excuse me. Or will they just kind of be like Ole Miss a little bit and play really, really good offense most of the time, but their defense is so bad that it can cost them a lot of games?
Right.
So that's my question, because at UCF, the defense got worse to the point where it's at right now. Gus Malzahn's trying to dig out of that hole. And if Tennessee does not come up with a defense at some point under Josh Heupel, this Tennessee football program won't compete for the SEC East.
Well, exactly. And about that defense, you know, sometimes when I'm out on my land with my dad and we're working on a project, he'll say, let's do this just for fun. Let's try this just for fun. Tennessee last night, just for fun, decided to put a linebacker on wide receiver Jameson Williams. If they're going to continue to do things like that, they are not going to win in this league
exactly.
against the big boys. So exactly what you're saying. They're going to have to also improve on defense if Josh Heupel is going to get this team anywhere. Because, yes, they can score. But that defense, you can't be putting guys on, you can't be putting linebackers on very fast receivers just for fun like that. You've got to be able to be aware.
Well, they're also not extremely deep at this point, and this is another unrelated point, but they're not deep right now, so they have to play a near-perfect game to pull an upset against a team that's more talented than they are,
right?
And that's just not happening. That's so difficult to do. The margin for error for them is so little. They don't have a whole lot of depth right now. It's going to take some time for him to get his guys in, but you definitely can have some faith in what Josh Heupel's doing from a game plan perspective, because it's keeping them in games for at least a half. And in the case against Ole Miss, it kept them in it for the entire time. I've got a side point here. I want to talk about Alabama for a second. I think Bryce Young just took first place in the Heisman race if he didn't have it already. I know in the first segment you were talking about Matt Corral being the front runner, but I think it's Bryce Young. Statistically, between those two, it's not super close. It's definitely not close from a passing perspective. From a total touchdowns perspective, Bryce Young still has the edge by a couple of scores. I wouldn't even put Matt Corral at second right now after what we've seen out in the last 2 weeks. I know he's been banged up a little bit, but statistically, he's falling behind Kenny Pickett as well at Pittsburgh. But I think Bryce Young's in first place. Imagine what he could do with an offensive line that actually could pass protect. And he still went 31 for 43 for 371 yards. He had two touchdowns, no picks. Additional 42 yards on the ground. He actually used his running ability for the first time this season, I think, that we've seen. He put up two scores. He showed that he's got dual threat ability. He's got more total touchdowns than Matt Corral on the year at this point. Kenny Pickett's pushing him really close right now, and Kenny Pickett has a couple less interceptions. So I like Bryce Young, then Kenny Pickett, and then Matt Corral. But Kenny Pickett's not on most people's radar at this moment. But you never know. Maybe Pittsburgh keeps winning. He'll get to New York. But at this point, I think people should be looking at Bryce Young maybe a little bit closer than they are at Matt Corral.
Well, maybe it's because I'm not looking at Bryce Young right now. I'm looking down the road, and I'm seeing a poor performance in the Iron Bowl against Auburn later on, and that'll take him out. But yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask you this, and I wanted to talk to Jeremy Law, who we're going to have on in the next segment, about this. It kind of feels right now like Alabama is coasting off of talent, but specifically Bryce Young's talent. Whenever you see games like this, whenever it's close for three quarters, eventually talent's going to win out. It's something that you mentioned. Tennessee doesn't have the bodies in the room to get with Alabama and to compete with them, because when Alabama's subbing out, they're subbing out those 4- and 5-star guys. Tennessee's looking on the sideline, and we're like, we don't have anybody. We've had these guys for three quarters. We're going to have to send you back out there. So right now, I'm curious to see if you hold a similar opinion. Is Alabama not necessarily coasting, but are they winning games not because of what the coaching staff is doing, but because simply Bryce Young is kind of carrying them to victory?
2 points. A, Bryce Young is the truck driver. In our analogy, truck versus trailer, Bryce Young is the truck driver here. He's the one pulling this team along where some of the receiver play. He's had a lot of drops this year from his receivers. I think when Justin Ferguson put out his graphic a couple weeks ago about adjusted completion percentage, Bryce Young would have had the third highest increase in adjusted completion percentage versus his regular completion percentage because Alabama's got some drops right now. Their receivers have not been as sure-handed as we've been accustomed to seeing. They haven't been running as crisp routes. They haven't been getting as open as much. I think some people would say that the play calling hasn't been as much in favor of Bryce Young either. He doesn't have the offensive line protection that Mac Jones and Tua had before that. His offensive line, honestly, it's not that good. I think it's above average in pass protection. It's a pretty good run blocking line. It's a good offensive line in the sense that they've got tons of five stars and they've recruited it really well, but I think it's underperforming for the level of talent that we know is in that room.
Right.
And I also think you look at my second point here, and you're talking about coasting. This was definitely a reversion back to what we saw in weeks prior before the Mississippi State game, where Alabama wasn't necessarily focused, they weren't necessarily dialed in, they weren't necessarily locked in. You saw how many times Nick Saban was just having a hissy fit on the sideline because of a delay of game penalty out of a kickoff, mind you, out of a kickoff. They had a lot of you know, dink and dunk 5-yard penalties here and there, just mental mistakes on the offense. There just wasn't a high level sense of urgency until the fourth quarter. It took Alabama a little while to get up, and it's like, sure, this is a game that you've won 14 straight over your rival, but still, it's Tennessee. It's a night game. You can't sell me on you are asleep. It was a night game against your rival. You want to punish this team most years, and they've taken joy in punishing this team in most years. So I think that, you know, if Alabama continues to play like this, they will get beat again. This is not a team that looks like it's going to win the national championship at this point. We know they've got the talent to, but the way that they're playing at this moment does not shout national championship to me.
Exactly, and they're going to have to work some things out because they brought in the best recruiting class in history this past year, so they're going to definitely have to figure some things out about whether or not, you know, their offensive line, their receivers are playing well enough, and maybe some backups should get some reps over the back half of this season. On the other side of this break, we've got Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports to talk a little bit more about the Crimson Tide's issues.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. We've got Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports on with us to talk a little bit about the Alabama Crimson Tide, their 52-24 win over the Tennessee Volunteers this past weekend. Jeremy, if you look at the final score and you look at the box score, you say that Alabama ran away with this one, but if you watched it for about three quarters or so, this was a lot more competitive than it has been in years past, this rivalry, that is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. If you look at the box score, if you just listened to somebody tell you the stats after every quarter, you would have thought that Alabama was just blowing the doors off of Tennessee. Those guys, I mean, they couldn't convert a third down. They had 10 first downs in the entire ball game. They averaged 250 on the ground. They barely, I mean, they don't even get to 65 rushing yards. And you go into the fourth quarter, and this is a 31-24 ball game. And a lot of Alabama fans are scratching their head, asking themselves, why is that the case? And now, after Bryce Young clearly had the camera on his face and dropped a nice little expletive after being hit for about the 20th time Saturday night, and Brian Robinson not being where he was supposed to be in his route because of how much pressure he was getting under in the third quarter. And you saw Bill O'Brien yelling a little bit in the box when they put the camera on him. Alabama's offense goes 4-for-4 after that and scores 4 touchdowns. So, you know, the team needs a little fire. Alabama's defense, man, if you just look at the numbers, they didn't play that poorly. I think about 200 of Tennessee's passing, or about 180 up there, what is that, 280 passing yards came on three plays. They give up a 70-yarder, a 55-yarder, and then they give up like a 45-yarder, and then one more play. They're in the end zone. So, you know, there's not any excuse for that for Alabama's defense. One time Josh Jobe is just looking at the sidelines. He gets quick snaps, similar to Devontae Smith doing that to the cornerback over at LSU that everybody thinks has been the savior to defensive backs for a couple years now. But, you know, there's no excuse for that Alabama defense. You look at the offense, man, they were humming and humming and humming, and you just make key mistakes. There's a lot to talk about in this game, but Alabama gets the job done. Listen, it's, what, 15? Was that 15 in a row, 14 in a row, 15 in a row over Tennessee? Something that's never been done in this rivalry, so it's still very important.
I think the most concerning thing for me, if I'm an Alabama fan and just as a bystander watching the Crimson Tide, is the lack of discipline. I feel like on both sides of the ball, we've seen penalties, we've seen miscues, whereas Alabama teams in the past would have gone out there and they would have executed, and it would have been uglier than maybe this year's team could possibly do. But where do you think the lack of discipline is coming from? I know we've seen it this weekend a little bit against Tennessee. We certainly saw it in the A&M game. We've seen it in flashes across different points this season. Where do you think it's coming from? Is it the coaching staff that could potentially be the issue?
Defensively, listen, there's not many excuses. There's not a lot of young guys playing on this defense. Chris Harris is in his third year as a starter. Will Anderson is one of the best players in college football, so we'll leave him out of this talk. But the defensive backs have all played. I mean, Jalen Arnold Davis, he's been on the roster forever. Jordan Battle is now a veteran. Josh Jobe is a veteran. They've tried everybody at the other safety spot. Brian Branch, Malachi Moore. I mean, it just seems like nobody in that defensive backfield is playing in any type of rhythm. And I thought Henry Toto'o has had his best back-to-back performances that he's had all year. He's dominated at that middle linebacker spot for the last 2 weeks. But the Alabama defensive backs, they just didn't have it together. And the problem is, it wasn't the whole game. It was three plays that they didn't have their stuff together, and those really resulted in three touchdowns. And that can hurt you. And then you look at special teams. I don't know who the special teams coach is. I know it's not Jeff Banks anymore. They hired a guy that was coaching, I think, high school out of the state of Texas. That's how the special teams have been a problem. The kickoff return touchdown against Texas A&M, it's fourth and 40 yards or something like that, and they rough the kicker. I mean, this Alabama special teams unit on kickoff, kickoff return, punt coverage, doesn't matter. They got to get it figured out. And listen, you're about to get the ball back first and 10 around midfield, and you rough the kick, the punter, and they go down and they score a touchdown. And Jamison Williams fumbles. I mean, there's a lot of mistakes, but I wouldn't really say it's penalties. I mean, they had four penalties for 30 yards. The crowd really was a problem for Tennessee. But it's just, I think it's more of inconsistency as opposed to just a complete lack of discipline. You were playing an offense like Tennessee has. It wants to go fast. They want to run 100 plays a game. They didn't get there because Alabama's defense played very well on Saturday. You're going to give up some big plays, but you can't give up the broken coverage play. Sometimes you're just going to get beat. You can't have guys running wide open. I mean, Tennessee literally scored all three of their touchdowns on broken plays. And if you're playing a good team, well, I'd say Tennessee's a good team. If you're playing a great team, you're going to lose games like that, as you see the Texas A&M game just 3 weeks ago.
It's another week where we bring up the offensive line with you, my man. It's another difficult showing. Take me through it.
It's not everybody on the offensive line. It's not 73, it's not 70, and it's not 55. Listen, Alabama's offense is 100th in the country in sacks allowed. They give up 2 1/3 sacks per game. They are 83rd in tackles for loss allowed against Power 5 opponents. That is like six. That's over six a game. If you look at Alabama converted 15 third downs against Tennessee guys, I think 75 to 80% of those, when I went back and watched, were third and five or more. I mean, the deep ball to Jamison Williams is a third and 15 because you can't block anybody. You're getting 1 yard on a carry on first down. And I don't think Chris Owens is a bad offensive lineman. He's a bad tackle. He's 6'2". He can't play tackle. And there might be – they opened up the competition 2 weeks ago. Chris Owens, I guess, was able to fight people off going in that Mississippi State game where he had a really bad first half. I wouldn't be surprised if they looked at it again in this bye week against LSU, against probably the best team in the conference that gets pressure with less than five. LSU gets pressure with four, and LSU shouldn't win that game. And Tennessee led the SEC in tackles for loss coming into this game, and they had quite a few against Alabama. But Chris Owens isn't a good tackle, and Darian Dalcourt isn't touching anybody at center. So I don't know. I think they're going to open that one back up a little bit more in the bye week, and they're going to get the best players on the field. And if that's Chris Owens, it's Chris Owens. But I'm telling you guys that Alabama offensive line is going to cost them another big game down the road, and Bryce Young is getting hit way too much for being the best quarterback in college football. What the guy's doing is amazing under pressure. Now he has to run. They can't block for him. He puts up over 400 and I think around 420 yards of offense, four touchdowns. I mean, I know Brian Harsin called Matt Corral the leader for the Heisman today. I don't necessarily think that – I don't think Matt Corral's going to win it. Bryce Young's probably going to end up winning it if this team wins out. But Bryce Young is too good to be playing behind an offensive line that consistently forces him into third and six plus and sometimes third and ten plus because they can't get any push. They allow too many negative plays, and they allow too many sacks.
You talked about Alabama losing another big game down the line, and you look up and down this Alabama resume, and I think you and I would both agree the best win on this resume is a 21-point win against Ole Miss at home, but the 2-point win over Florida doesn't look that great anymore. The Miami win doesn't look great to open up the year. You're holding your hat on that Ole Miss victory that was 21 points at home. My question is, where does this Alabama team compare to the other teams that they're ranked around, 1 through 6? How much do you like this Alabama team, and where do they lose again?
Well, I mean, if you put them on a neutral field against Georgia, I think Georgia would probably be – they'd be favored right now. You put them on a neutral field against Cincinnati, they win. Neutral field against Ohio State, Ohio State has defensive problems of their own. You know, especially with what Alabama did to them last year, they'd probably say Alabama wins. I mean, who else is up there in
Oklahoma?
The I mean, Alabama, yeah, Oklahoma. They probably listen, Oklahoma. I mean, come on, man. Everybody's fussing about Alabama. Oklahoma is dogfighting their way out against Kansas. So, I mean, there's a lot of there's more schools up there, but I think Alabama is probably end up being a favorite on a neutral field against every team in the country except Georgia right now. But Alabama's offensive line has to get better in this bye week, and they have to improve because if you look at the Iron Bowl, the potential SEC championship game, and if they win that one, the college football playoff, the offensive line is going to have to get better. I mean, Bryce, you cannot consistently have 25 third down attempts in a game and expect your quarterback to convert 75% of those when a bunch of those are third and five or longer. It's not going to happen. You know, a 2.5-yard play is not good in college football. And that's kind of what Alabama was averaging right there on third downs is 2.5 yards per play. They're getting a 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7. And against really good defenses, which Tennessee's is not, outside of being able to rush the passer a little bit, you know, tackles for loss. Yeah, they're good up there, but they're not a great defense. If you play good defense in those situations, you're not going to fare too well.
Okay, Jeremy, you've seen Ole Miss already this year play your own team. Auburn taking on Ole Miss in the biggest game of the Tiger season up to this point. What should be Auburn's biggest concern going into the ballgame this Saturday?
I think Auburn's biggest concern is their pass defense versus Power 5 opponents. If I was looking at it right, I think they're sub-80 in the country against Power 5 opponents in the pass defense. Listen, they don't stop the run great, but they don't break. But Ole Miss is going to throw the football, especially coming out of that LSU game. Kiffin says he apologized to Matt Corral for not giving him more opportunities to throw it. Well, that's going to be the game plan versus Auburn in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Auburn's going to have to get some pressure. They're going to and then you still got to stop Ely in the other back for Ole Miss, and they mix it up really well. And you got to think about that Alabama game with Ole Miss. If Ole Miss converts one of those fourth downs in the first half, you know, there's no telling how that game is different. And unfortunately for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss in that game, guys, they missed all of them, every fourth down. I mean, in the first half, I think they about missed them all. It's at least all the big ones, especially on that first drive when they're marching and get stuffed on probably a bad zone read give. Probably should have been a zone read take from Matt Corral. They get stuffed. Alabama marches 90 yards down the field for a touchdown. Lane Kiffin's going to be the same Lane Kiffin. He's not going to come in a Jordan-Hare and punt on fourth down. So, you know, if some of those goals go Ole Miss's ways, you could have a tight ball game on your hands. But, you know, I'm not so sure. Ole Miss is coming off a bunch of physical games in a row, Alabama, Arkansas, whoever they played 2 weeks ago. Who do they play, guys? They played Ole Miss this Saturday.
Tennessee was a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago they're in a physical contest where people are throwing stuff out. I mean, they're not beat up, banged up, but they're coming off a long stretch of physical football games, and they're going to have another one on their hands with a fresh Auburn team in Jordan-Hare.
I want to switch to basketball here really quickly. Just kind of want to get your overarching thoughts. Alabama had an exhibition game on Sunday. They beat Louisiana Lafayette 73-68. Basketball season is just around the corner now. It's just a couple weeks away. What are your expectations of the Crimson Tide basketball team?
Well, I mean, I think they're going to be pretty good, but I mean, it's so, I think it's hard to be consistent in basketball. I mean, you've seen Auburn the last couple of years. They go to a Final Four. They weren't bad, but they weren't a great team after that. Alabama, I mean, and it looks like two of your, you know, players that you trust were suspended for the game or the charity game Saturday or whatever that was yesterday against Louisiana. So, I mean, if JQ doesn't get his head on right, Alabama's going to have some problems. So I think they have the pieces in place. Listen, they got Badaico. They have Keon Ellis. They had J.D. Davidson. They got Shaq back. I mean, they have JQ. I mean, they're going to have a good roster, but, you know, it almost, I think, helps Alabama. They didn't make a deep run. They got bounced in the Sweet 16. They would have loved to make a deep run, don't get me wrong. But coming back into this year with a little bit of chip on your shoulder, you think you probably should have beat UCLA, especially after Reese nails a half quarter to send you the overtime, and then you get beat by double digits in the final 5 minutes. I think they're going to be good, but basketball is just such a hard sport to tell guys. And if you look at their non-conference schedule, it's not very favorable. So they're gonna have to win some non-conference games, some resume builders, but then they're really gonna have to bring their lunch pail in conference play to really beef that record up as you get close to the SEC tournament and then Selection Sunday.
You look at their non-conference slate; they've got Belmont or Drake, Gonzaga, Houston, Memphis. I mean, it's going to be a difficult non-conference slate for the Crimson Tide for sure. Jeremy, we really appreciate you taking the time to stop by and talk with us.
Thanks, guys, man. Y'all take care. Have a good week, and we'll enjoy bye week this week, so all eyes on Auburn Ole Miss. Should be a fun Saturday.
Absolutely, Jeremy. Really appreciate it, man. That was Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports on with us to talk a little bit about the Crimson Tide. On the other side of this break, we wrap up hour number one of the show. Wrapping up hour number one of On the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything going on in the sports world, 334-321-1390, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. I'm sorry, Noah is
goofing.
He's goofing in the studio right now, and I'm appreciating it.
Barely can hold it together.
All right, wrapping up hour number one of the show. Get to some more Saturday takeaways here with the SEC. Ole Miss 31-17 victors over the LSU Tigers at home. LSU now 4-4 on the season. Ole Miss trying to build a little bit more momentum heading into their monstrous showdown with Auburn this weekend. What were some of your takeaways from this game, Noah?
I don't think they looked that good.
I don't think so either.
Why?
Because you look at the stat line for Matt Corral. Again, 185 yards passing. He had, if you take out the sacks, I believe only 47 yards rushing. He was not very good in either department, and they kept the game plan away from him because he was not fully healthy. On top of that, they gave up 17 points, and they gave up a score really quickly to LSU. LSU was doing what Auburn was doing to Arkansas last weekend. They were hitting the deep ball. They were moving the ball downfield, running the ball comfortably. They were hitting the outside runs well. I think this Ole Miss team is vulnerable in a lot of different spots. I think that's been proven in their loss to Alabama earlier this season. But, yeah, in terms of I don't think they looked very good. They only scored 31 points. They held on to the ball for half of the game. And Matt Corral wasn't as efficient as he has been in games past. And I keep thinking, man, Auburn's defense, I think Auburn's a better team than LSU. We've seen that because they beat them. I think Auburn's a better football team.
Auburn's came a long way since that ball game.
I think
LSU has too.
I think Auburn's better than Tennessee. But man, the way that Ole Miss would, the fact that this was not a bigger win for Ole Miss surprises me. And so it just gives me hope. As an Auburn fan, it gives me hope for this weekend.
Well, Matt Corral posted his second lowest total of pass attempts for the season with 23 against LSU. Ole Miss's offense, though, what that kind of shows us is it's dynamic in a way that allows Matt Corral to either sit in the pocket and pick you apart or dice you with his legs. LSU did a pretty good job of hemming him up on the ground, holding him to a second lowest rushing total of the season, which is 24 yards on the ground, 2 yards per carry. Seemed like they wanted to protect him after that Tennessee game where they ran a bajillion plays. Mm-hmm. That's a real number, a bajillion. And my question is, can Auburn get pressure on Matt Corral? Because he may not be full healthy going into this weekend. Well, he'll be a lot closer to it, but I do think that pressure, and we saw this in the Tennessee game and into the Alabama game, pressure will make him uncomfortable. Pressure makes Matt Corral turn back into what he was last year, which is make mistakes. Now, he's not making as many as he did last year, but if you can get some pressure, if Auburn can win the battle up front at the defensive line, Auburn will have a good shot to at least contain. Once again, not stop. I don't think you can hope to stop Ole Miss. I think you can only hope to contain and put it in a position where that defense is so bad on the other side of the ball where you can say, hey, if we can score 35 points, we win. Auburn did that against a more complete team, I would say, about Arkansas. But then again, Ole Miss did beat them 52-51. Like, the fact that you can look at that game and say, okay, Auburn beat Arkansas by two touchdowns. Auburn should be able to handle themselves against Ole Miss, but it's all about matchups.
Well, I'll say this. I'll give a padlock stat here for you. Like Josh Pate would say, if Matt Corral has 185 passing yards against Auburn in his state right now and his health right now, Ole Miss is not going to win the football game. At least I don't think so. Mississippi right now, Ole Miss, that is, they have given up 16 sacks on the year, 2.29 per game. That is good for 8th in the SEC. So you ask the question, can Auburn get a little pressure on Ole Miss? I think they can.
That's crazy that they've given up that many sacks with his mobility.
Exactly.
I think Auburn's got the better lines here. I think Auburn's defensive line and offensive line is better than Ole Miss's defensive and offensive lines, but they got to do it.
I think so, yeah. And they gave up 3 this past weekend. I would like to see how Auburn handles themselves defensively this weekend, because you have to respect Ole Miss's ground game outside of Corral, and you have to respect the fact that Corral can still beat you with his arm. He's still a very, very talented quarterback. So Auburn's going to have to approach this game, I feel like, knowing that Ole Miss is going to throw a lot at them, both in terms of throwing the football and running the football, and they've got to be able to prepare for that. And what Ole Miss elects to do, I think we'll try and again, this weekend, get away from running Matt Corral a whole lot. So that's something that Auburn could potentially look at. But in terms of how Auburn prepares for Ole Miss and can they get pressure, I think they've got to approach this like they've got to be able to play Ole Miss straight up. And whenever they get into pressure situations, they take advantage.
Zills, you make it to a bowl game?
No, I don't think so. Because
5-7?
Yeah, because they have to beat Arkansas, A&M, or Alabama to do so. They'll beat ULM, which will get them to 5 wins. But right now, Arkansas, I think on the road in Baton Rouge, can go in there and beat LSU. Because if Auburn can do it, I think Arkansas can do it as well.
Quick trivia question. Who's last place in the SEC West right now?
I believe it's Mississippi State. No?
It's the people's champion.
It's
the Arkansas Razorbacks.
The Arkansas Razorbacks, yeah.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Arkansas has been on a little bit of a slide. Look, they can be a good football team and still lose 3 in a row to teams that are better than them. I'm not saying they're terrible. It's just they're on a little bit of a skid right now.
They got an easier back end of the schedule, too. They'll get back right where they want to be.
Exactly. That's going to do it for our number one of the show. On the other side of this break, we've got our Making Headlines segment. Going to talk a little bit more about the Atlanta Braves and their World Series against the Houston Astros.
You are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7500.
Hour number two of On the Line. Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. It's a beautiful Monday afternoon here in the studio. Got our daily Making Headlines segment here for you. The Atlanta Braves did the thing, guys. They did the thing. They beat the Los Angeles Dodgers and they punched their ticket to the World Series against the Houston Astros. Stings. Houston Astros. Sting, how you feeling right now?
I'm feeling great, and I'm starting to get used to going all the way to the Fall Classic here. For the third time in 5 years, the Houston Astros are just 4 wins away from winning it all.
What is your prediction? Let's go ahead and get it. What's your prediction for the series?
So my prediction, I think it's actually going to be a very good series because, like I said earlier at the beginning
of
the show.
Don't patronize me.
No, I really do believe that because the Braves are playing, in my opinion, the best baseball of anyone right
Flattery
now.
Flattery will get you nowhere.
All right. But you know what? At the end of the day, I don't think they're going to be able to continue the heat against the Astros, and I will be going with Houston in six games.
Astros in six. All right.
I heard Astros in four.
He texted me Astros in four as soon as the Braves won, and I was like, dude, just let me celebrate the moment. He was like, you already know you lost. I was like, okay.
That's a lie.
All right.
Is it?
That totally happened. No, I'm kidding.
How can we believe you, Sting?
I got the receipts.
You support.
I've
got the receipts.
I haven't texted
Lance
all weekend.
Cheating.
Because there are none.
I have the receipts. There are none. I haven't spoken to Lance all weekend.
But yeah, Atlanta Braves played fantastic against the Dodgers in that final game. Tyler Matzek was able to get out of that jam. I believe it was in the eighth. Might have been in the seventh
inning, and then he also pitched the eighth.
My goodness. Build a statue for that man.
That was pretty amazing to watch.
Hold on. Let's just wait on the statue until after the World Series win, because if something heinous happens in the World Series, then it's not good.
Poor Luke Jackson choked it for us in the previous game, and then this game he came in, and my sister was sitting there telling me, who is a huge Braves fan, by the way, he's like, he's not going to do anything wrong. He's going to get us out of this inning. It's just fine. And I'm sitting there going, I'm like, he's about to lose us this game. And then that was before he gave up a couple of hits. And then it happened, and I was just like, yeah, I don't feel too sorry for Luke Jackson right now. I mean, I feel bad for the kid and the fact that, like, I don't hate against him as a person, but as his performance, like, I'm glad they pulled him. I'm glad they pulled him. And the Braves get it done. Astros in six is Sting's prediction. Right now, I'm not feeling too confident as well. I will say Astros in six as well. So we said this earlier. It's like we're going to rely on Noah to be our homer in the studio here.
It wouldn't be on the line if I wasn't totally juiced up 24/7.
What's your prediction?
Let's go, though? Braves!
Braves in what?
Three.
Four. Six.
Braves in three.
Six.
Braves in six. All right.
That totally
so we don't
would
think
be the
there's
Braves.
Any, we don't think there's a game seven at all between the three of us?
I think I could see the Astros winning in seven or the Braves in six. I still don't stand by the scenario where the Braves win a clutch game.
If we,
like, I just don't see that happening.
If we lose in seven, I will be content. I will be like,
not
you know,
heartbroken.
Yeah, I'll be like, you know what? If as long as it's not a 3-1 lead that we've somehow blown, I'll be like, you know what? We fought until the very end. We were sub 500 at one point this season after 100 games had been played. We fought back. We got to the end. It's Auburn in the Final Four all over again. And except it hopefully it will not come on a heinous foul call or missed double dribble or something like that.
How twisted would that be if, you know, the Braves went back up 3-1 on the Dodgers again this year and everybody was thinking it. You know, everybody was. Something horrible was going to happen again, and then they do it in the World Series and it actually happens. That would just be – that would be torture.
I'd be off the line.
I'd be off the line.
I would not be able to show my face in public. Another headline here, the 2021-2022 preseason AP All-America team was released today. I believe this is for basketball,
yes.
Correct? And let's see.
What other sport would it be?
Ju Jang was on it. Kofi Cockburn was on it, I believe.
Drew Timmy
was on it as well.
I'm pulling it up.
There was
Colin Gillespie of Villanova.
There was an Indiana kid on there
Trace
as well.
Trace Jackson Davis.
Let's go.
Hoosiers, baby!
What's your title in Indiana again?
I don't. I just like them. I have an Indiana jersey in my closet.
All right. That's cool. But yeah, Jabari Smith robbed 100%. Disappointed. what a disgrace this AP team. By the way, the people that vote on AP things, I just want to say, it was like sometimes you see these guys and you see their votes and stuff and you're just like, man, I'm not saying that you're bad at your job, but like, I feel like you're not being honest
but
with
you're
yourself.
Bad at your job.
Yeah, you're not being honest with yourself whenever you put 0-3 Arizona in the top 25 or something stupid like that.
Yeah, they're 0-7 now.
I think we're going to continue to see things like that. But yeah, I don't really have a whole lot of gripes with this All-America team. I don't think Johnny Juzang is as good as many people think he's going to be. Look, he was great in March Madness, right? He was great on their run. But is he going to be good for the entire regular season to the point where we consider him a first-team All-American? I don't know.
I love this preseason All-America team because they're all returners. They're all guys that have been in their programs for a couple of years. Drew Timmy was a star for Gonzaga last year. Johnny Juzang, obviously, he was smoking hot in the postseason. Up to that point, nobody at UCLA really was that wonderful from an offensive standpoint, as you would expect from a Mick Cronin team, but they all play great defense. Colin Gillespie, longtime player for the Villanova Wildcats. Kofi Cockburn, heart and soul of that Illinois basketball team. They are super pumped that he's back for them instead of going to the NBA. And then Trace Jackson Davis, probably the lesser-known guy of all of these players on this AP preseason All-America, but he had an excellent year for Indiana last season, 19.1 points per game, 9 rebounds, 1.4 assists. This guy could end up being a first-round selection in the NBA draft this upcoming year. The big reason why he's one of the lesser-known guys at 6'9", 245, even with those numbers in the Big Ten, is Indiana kind of capitulated at the end last year, had a pretty disappointing season considering the talented players that Indiana brings in on a year-in and year-out basis. They've got a new head coach this upcoming year. It's a vastly different Indiana basketball program this upcoming year. The question is, can they finally begin to achieve what the basketball history at Indiana asked for, right? And that's what Mike Woodson is going to be tasked with at Indiana. Longtime NBA coach as well with Mike Woodson. I didn't love the hire when it first came out, but we'll see what he can do.
Indiana last season, 12-15, lost 6 straight to wrap up the year. Yeah, I don't have a lot of huge complaints with this All-America team. I don't really know. I can't really think off the top of my head right now who I would replace Johnny Juzang with if I have a little bit of a gripe with him. But no major complaints there. The Alabama basketball team, the Fighting Jeremy Laws, needed a second half run to beat Louisiana 73-68 in a charity exhibition game on Sunday.
They were without some guys, and it's your first. Legit basketball game that you've played this year. I can't talk about this and say, oh, they barely beat Louisiana. Auburn lost an exhibition game to Barry College a couple years ago. Wasn't it? It was Barry, right? Or was it someone else?
It might have been Barry. I believe it was Barry.
Regardless, they lost to a Division II, Division III program, right, in an exhibition game. It happens, and that team ended up going to the Final Four.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I was like, yeah, they might have lost it, but that team, I think I've told this story on the show before, but the year that Auburn went to the Final Four, no, that was the year before they lost to Barry. The next year, they won their exhibition game, but it was somewhat close, if I remember. But
needless to say, it doesn't matter what happened at this exhibition
game. Exactly, that's what I was going to say.
Auburn still went to the tournament the year that they lost it.
Yeah, my point being is that I came out of that game, that exhibition game, the year we went to the Final Four, and I said, leaving the stadium, I was like, this is not a very good basketball team. Cold takes exposed. There you go, right there. But yeah, it doesn't really matter what happens in the exhibition game. Props to them for actually winning it and not embarrassing themselves and losing it. If they were without some guys, I can understand this final score.
What's interesting, though, is this is a very similar type of outcome that you would have gotten from an Alabama team last year. Slow first half, didn't shoot the basketball very well, had a monstrous run to take a lead and win a game close. You know, we saw that at several times last year. When Alabama didn't play well, they typically still found ways to win basketball games by putting together a hot run of shooting. It's still a very similar type of thing here for Alabama, this exhibition game. So, you know, they didn't shoot the ball well in the first half. They cleaned it up in the second half. Once again, not a whole lot to take away from here, but I do think that this Alabama team it's obviously not nearly as experienced as it was last year. That's why I'm not as high up in this Alabama team as everybody else is, despite all the talent that's there. I think they end up returning a lot of these guys off of this team going into next year. It depends on what happens with JD Davison. Is he good enough to go pro? Definitely he's got the talent, but does he end up actually putting together a type of season that warrants him going to the NBA draft? We talked about guard John Petty. We talked about John Petty when he was a freshman way, 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 way back 4 or 5 years ago, and you thought, wow, this guy's got a shot to go pro, and then he ended up being a 4-year player. So this Alabama team needing someone to step up as a leader, they've got the guys in the backcourt to do it. I question whether or not they have the guys in the front court. I think there's serious holes here, and I think there's some questions about experience with this Alabama team. I still think they're going to be very good in a really good SEC, but I'm not certain that they're number 2 in the league like the preseason media poll predicted.
Got a text here from a good friend of the program. Zach Blackerby said it was very bad whenever Auburn lost to Barry in their exhibition game. And then also said Auburn had UAB in town for a scrimmage, and they the Tigers beat UAB by 30. So just give you a little update there as to where the Auburn Tigers
is. That a John Rothstein secret scrimmage score?
It might be. It might be. According to Zach, they beat the Tigers by – or they beat the Blazers by 30. So just tells you where Auburn's program is as opposed to Alabama's. Just want to throw that out there. The Fighting Jeremy Laws, the Crimson Tide.
I still think they're going to be very good. I just don't think that they're as good as some of the other teams at the top.
I think that's fair. I think
the question is Kentucky going to be good again?
I think they will be. They're an NCAA tournament team because of the transfers that they brought in, but I don't think they are top two in the league good.
Really?
I think they're talented. I don't think they're going to be back.
Can they shoot again?
That's the question, right? And they brought in CJ Frederick, I believe, from Iowa, if I'm not mistaken, to kind of be one of those shooters. We'll just have to wait and see. Ty Washington is going to be involved as well. We're just going to have to wait and see. Final headline here. This week's AP Top 25 poll sees Alabama hop Oklahoma for number three in the rankings. Oklahoma barely getting by Kansas.
Is this deserved? Should Alabama be number three?
I think so. Here's the thing that I've come to learn with the AP poll. Regardless of how frustrated I may be with the voters and things and how the actual final poll releases, the AP poll is not a power ranking system. It's not a predicting what's going to happen down the line. It's a merit-based thing. It's what have you done for me this past weekend? What have you done for me up until this point? What does your record indicate? Who are the teams you've beaten? What are you doing in terms of the eye test so far this year? So whenever you see things like this happen, I think you have to ask yourself the question, like you just said, is this worth it? Or like, are they actually deserving of moving up to number three? I will say yes, because I feel like we have seen more flaws out of Oklahoma this season than we have Alabama. If those two teams were to play right now, I'd probably take Alabama to win that game. And Caleb Williams, look, he may have done well against Texas, and he may do well for the rest of the season, but this was the letdown game that was eventually going to happen following that Texas victory. And so it came against the best team that it could have come against, Kansas, because if you're going to come back on anybody in FBS, I think Kansas would be at the top of your list. If you're going to pick, it's like, okay, I am down 10-0 at halftime.
Did you see how they made tickets, like, free?
Yeah.
That they just were letting people in at the start of, like, the first or start of the second quarter, something like that, that, like, when they saw they had a chance, they were like, please come.
This was wild.
Please join us.
Not only did they send out an email at halftime, they tweeted out, it was like, the east and west gates are open. It was like,
just come on in.
Just come on. Like, yeah. We don't care. You don't have to pay. Come and watch this happen. And then Oklahoma, I believe, scored a touchdown on every single possession they had in the second half. They only had three possessions in the first half, by the way, which is absolutely wild. So yeah, props to Oklahoma for getting out of that jam. But, yeah, I think Alabama moving up to number three is deserving.
I agree with that. I think Alabama's the better team between those two. And there's still a lot of stuff that's going to shake out. Oklahoma still has four chances left to lose. I'm curious if teams are getting enough film now on Caleb Williams to give him some issues, because he was not an effective passer on Saturday. And I wonder if we're going to see him. Now, he was better than what Spencer Rattler was giving you, but he was not an effective passer. Low yards per attempt totals, still had an interception thrown in there. And that was against Kansas. Now, it could just be a random poor game. These things happen. But my thing is, if this becomes a trend, What's going on?
I thought it was interesting that Spencer Rattler was in street clothes on the sideline.
He's already in the portal, man. He's already gone. I said this on the show jokingly a couple weeks ago, but after talking with my editor at LSU Wire, we've kind of got this theory brewing. It's like, if he enters the portal, think about a world where this happens, right? Lane Kiffin goes to LSU, and Spencer Rattler transfers to LSU as well. Wouldn't that be fun to watch? Like, if they still lost to Auburn, wouldn't that be fun to watch?
Oh, if they still lose to Auburn.
If they still lose to Auburn, I think that would be fun. Also, just real quick here, just want to look at the Oklahoma drive charts. Okay, first half, 5 plays punt, 3 plays interception, 9 plays turnover on downs. In the second half, 14 plays touchdown, 3 plays touchdown, 4 plays touchdown, 4 plays touchdown, 12 plays touchdown. That was Oklahoma. So, again, if you're going to come back on anybody, I'd like my chances against Kansas.
Final score of that game?
35-23 was the final score.
It's like it wasn't ever close.
It was almost like it
was. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that play that Caleb Williams made towards the end when Kennedy Brooks got stuffed at the line on 4th-and-1.
Yeah, you just like
was hard to watch.
It was like it's like the
should that have been legal?
I have no idea.
Bring up the Star Wars Episode 1 Phantom Menace where the Viceroy is like, is that legal?
I will make it legal.
To bring up another meme here, it's like I think I've brought this up before on the show, like the Soviet Union meme where it's like, it's not yours, it's ours. It's not
Kennedy Brooks football.
Yeah,
it's our football.
It's not 60 minutes, it's our, right? So there you go. It's Caleb Williams was just like, yep, it's mine now. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I sat there watching. I was like, Kansas is going to win this game. And some
you thought
higher,
wrong, Sting.
And then some higher power said no.
Any other?
That was how I walked away from that.
Any other major complaints in the AP Top 25? Anything out of the ordinary here?
I would be griping about Coastal still being ranked, but nobody outside of the Top 25 deserves to be ranked above them.
Right.
Yeah. Other than maybe Arkansas, but... You know, you've ran out of teams to rank. That is how bad college football has been this year. You've ran out of teams to rank.
I'm not mad at Coastal being ranked at number 24, but when we were talking just a couple weeks ago after Auburn lost to Georgia and they got bounced from the top 25, one of the things that I said was, I'm like, I'm really frustrated with where Coastal is ranked right now because of the teams they've beaten and how they've beaten them. At some point, they're going to lose this season. And they're gonna either get bounced or it's gonna be close. They've beaten the Citadel, Kansas, Buffalo, UMass, ULM, and Arkansas State.
I mean, that's a horrifying schedule.
I'm shocked to see Penn State still in front of Auburn, or is behind Auburn. Excuse me. I was kind of expecting Auburn to be like 19 and them 18.
Yeah, Penn State right now, man. We needed them to play well.
Yep.
And they
failed us.
And it's just like how. Do you do that real quick before we go to break? I want to get y'all's thoughts. Actually, no, we're going to talk about this later in the show. Let's go ahead and get to break. And on the other side, we're going to get to some more Saturday takeaways because there was a lot to glean from this weekend, even though some people thought it would be somewhat of a sleepy slate. You're listening to On the Line. Forty minutes left in the Monday edition of On the Line. Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything going on in the sports world. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, or you can text us at 334-564-1840. I want to get to some more Saturday takeaways here, and we were talking about this during the break. This is what I wanted to talk about before we went to break. Illinois and Penn State, the 9-overtime thriller. In Big Ten fashion, 20-18 was the final score. Illinois wins on the road over Penn State. Yes, Sean Clifford played in this game. Yes, Illinois had less than, I believe it was 40 yards passing in this game, and they still somehow managed to win.
Like 30 yards passing.
It was something ridiculous. They found a way to win, and we were discussing during the break, you know, 9 overtimes. After the 3rd overtime, you start going for 2-point conversions and nothing else. Is this a good format for the foreseeable future?
Oh, headed to the 5th overtime, I was like, this is a bad idea. This is a bad idea.
So I think the conclusion we came to during the break, because Sting was saying yes, I think we have to differentiate here between things that are comical and things that are entertaining.
Because Sting is the most sarcastic person I know.
Because
he liked it in pain.
Even I enjoyed it because it was entertaining, or I was laughing at it because it was a bad product. And I believe that's what you were saying as well. Was the previous format better than what we currently have?
Yes,
absolutely. It was a bad product. That is a reality moving forward in overtime for college football. It's not like you can avoid it. That's a reality where both teams just may not be able to get into the end zone.
With that being said, though, I don't want to use this one as the underlying rule that, like, oh, yeah, it's always going to look like this.
Right.
These two teams played horribly on Saturday.
Right, absolutely.
Really bad. And if you have better quarterback play, this doesn't happen. And honestly, the back-and-forth 2-point conversions may solve some of the issues that the rule was designed to solve, we just had, likewise, just playing devil's advocate with you guys, how much of this is the fact that we just had two really bad football teams on Saturday?
I think that is absolutely true, 100%. Like I said, it's not the definition of this over time, but it is a possible reality. The other possible reality is they just keep scoring two-point conversions, but even then, I'm sitting here going, I don't want my football games decided by a penalty kick, in essence. I don't want that to be the deciding factor. Maybe what I think they should have done is extended it past three overtimes, because I want to be able to see if these teams are truly duking it out. Fifth overtime, I think, would have been fair. Okay, you start going for two-point conversions at that point. So that may be just me being stupid and being like, well, you get it after three overtimes. What's the difference? I just think that the format right now is just
you would think that eventually, if we waited until the fifth overtime, then somebody would have been able to close it out and win before that point. Because in the two overtimes that we had before that were standard rules, both teams just kicked a field goal. They couldn't get anything going offensively.
Because you don't see a lot of games go past three overtimes, right? So typically it's going to be decided within the first couple of overtimes which team is going to be the victor. If it gets to that fifth overtime point, we shouldn't already be two penalty kicks in. We should get to penalty kicks at about the fifth overtime, because people want to go home, and also it's just we can't end it in a draw.
I didn't know what the problem was with the original format. So, you know, I'm with you guys. I think the previous one is better. I don't know why we changed it to begin with, but
I'll tell you why.
Why?
It messes up TV spots.
Well, they're just in the game as a tie then.
No. Ties are un-American.
Bringing back ties up at the college football playoff.
I am invoking Ted Lasso here. Ties are un-American.
Dude, the CFP,
and I agree with you,
would lose their mind if we brought back ties, because they'd be like, how are we supposed to gauge anything?
Don't tie, obviously. I was just joking when I said that, but I'm just saying, like, that's a stupid reason. Where at the end of the day, what's more important is trying to figure out, you know, who won the actual football game, and doing it in an entertaining fashion. I'll say that. So I think this game, and I'm looking at some of the replays, like the third overtime, there were two drops. Both teams, and Penn State dropped one on the reverse pass, and then on the other side, Illinois had a perfect shot at it and dropped it themselves with a chance to win. I mean, these teams had chances to win it early on, and then they didn't. And so I do think a lot of this was that these teams are just, they played horribly on Saturday.
I think also, you know, if we're going to point fingers and laugh at something else, this is Big Ten football. If this had happened anywhere in the conference outside of an Ohio State game, you would have probably seen a similar result.
It's a brutal loss for Auburn, though. To see this for Auburn's, you know, playoff standing. It's like Penn State's got more losses. This dropped them all the way to 20. And you guys remember how in the preseason I said I wouldn't be shocked if Penn State didn't finish in the top 25? Look, Penn State still has to play Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. Are you favoring this Penn State team against any of those teams down the stretch?
Not with an unhealthy Sean Clifford.
Am I favoring them against Rutgers and Maryland?
Sure, yeah. I'm talking about the ranked teams there.
I don't know if I favor them in four of those five games. Even against Rutgers, if you lose at home to Illinois, you are capable of losing against Rutgers.
I'm just saying it's on the table for Penn State to be 7-5 at the end, and that's not in the top 25.
What percent healthy would you put Sean Clifford at, though? Because he only had like 165 passing yards, and I was listening to just recaps of the game where people who were able to watch the entire game, I wasn't able to watch it start to finish. I only tuned in the fourth quarter. But they were all saying that he was clearly not 100%. And should not have played.
Here's the reality, though. I don't think it matters because their backup's not much better, if not at all.
And that's they're saying that's why he played, is because the backup is just awful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The percentage is not enough.
Will Levis.
My response. Yeah, it would be dope if you had a backup quarterback.
If Sean Clifford is 100%,
do they win that game?
Do they win that game? Are you favoring them at all against any of the three of Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan? Maybe. Now, no, because he's clearly unhealthy.
I'd favor him over Michigan and Michigan State if he was 100%.
I would favor them over Michigan State.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll see which one of those two is better this weekend. That's going to be a great game to watch.
And he had 4.9 yards per attempt, 165 yards, 19 for 34. I mean, it was a bad day for Sean Clifford. But here's the thing. They only averaged 2.1 yards per carry on the ground. Illinois averaged 5.3. At the end of the day, Penn State got beat where it matters, in the trenches. Undeniably. You can't break that down any other way. You look at the sack totals for these two teams. Illinois was able to get 4 sacks, 8 tackles for loss. Penn State got 4 sacks, 6 tackles for loss. So even in those categories, Illinois is still getting more negative plays. You break down the rushing numbers, 5.3 yards per carry for Illinois, 2.1 for Penn State. This is what you and I were talking about a month ago going into this. It's just Sean Clifford was playing really well at that time. But outside of Sean Clifford, this football team struggles anywhere else. Like, running the football is not this team's forte, and I don't think their defense is amazing. I think it's fine, but this is a team that's going to struggle down the stretch because everything just got really simple for opposing defenses in the Big Ten when they're playing against Penn State. Ohio State's going to run all over them.
With a healthy Sean Clifford right now, could Auburn beat Penn State?
I think if Auburn played Penn State 2 weeks ago before he got hurt, I think Auburn might have won.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Is if he was 100%, I still think Auburn would have won that game. And also, just one more thing. Where are you at, Phil Steele? Talking about Penn State being the most improved team in the nation. I know injuries happen, but...
Man. I mean, it's still not over yet. I mean, I still think that they could find a way. He's going to get healthier and healthier. And I think, to his credit on saying that they were a bounce-back team this year, they were 5-1.
They were.
Going into this game.
They were undefeated until Sean Clifford got hurt. He got hurt in that Iowa game, which they ended up not being able to close out.
Still healthy, though, I would not favor him against Michigan or Ohio State at this point.
Yeah, but still, that's a major bounce-back year for them, though, compared to what they looked like last year.
0-5, yeah.
Most improved team in the nation, though?
Let's talk about that when we come back then. Who has improved dramatically versus last year?
We'll talk about it.
Let's do it on the other side of this break.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Got some more Saturday takeaways here for you. About half an hour left in the Monday edition of On the Line. But before we get to that, we were asking as we went to break, who's the most improved team in college football this season? Is it Penn State or is it somebody else?
If they hadn't lost to Illinois, I think Penn State had a really strong argument to still be in that conversation. But losing to Illinois really hurts them there. I think you could take this on a conference-by-conference approach, and you could see which teams had huge upswings in wins. Houston should be one of those teams. I don't remember them having a great season last year. They're atop the American Athletic Conference right now, so Houston's another team that I think you could look at. The SEC, you could say Arkansas, Ole Miss, Kentucky. All those teams had losing records last season. This year, they are having much better seasons than they were last year, and they've actually beaten some ranked teams too. Pulling back up what Houston did last year, yeah, Houston was 3-5 last year, and they got up to 6-1 right now, 4-0 in the AAC. They do not play Cincinnati in the regular season. SMU, I think, had a decent year last year. They're 7-0, 3-0, but they're obviously having a huge year compared to what they typically do. There's a lot to still break down in that AAC. In the Atlantic Coast, Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Big bump this year, undefeated. I'm still wondering how this team continues to win. Give up 50. If you had told me that they gave up 56 to Army, I said they lost. That they did not lose. They scored 70.
Yeah, it's a basketball score there. Yeah, you believe it or not, Army shot 32% from the floor in that game. That's why they only scored 56 points, believe it or not.
Pittsburgh, I think, is a team that could fit into this category.
Yeah, I'm looking down the line. Like you mentioned, Arkansas, Kentucky from the SEC. Auburn, I think you could make an argument for a little bit. Michigan State, Michigan from the Big Ten. Wake Forest from the ACC, like you mentioned. Houston.
Baylor.
Baylor from the Big 12. I think you've got a lot of different options, and when in terms of saying the most improved team in the nation, I don't think it's Penn State. I think that there are a couple of options that are just simply more impressive.
What about Texas Tech? I know obviously they're not the most improved, but
they also just fired Matt Wells.
I know, but why? They're 5-3. When was the last time that I said Texas Tech was 5-3? Now their last four games are against all ranked teams, so I think they probably just said, "Oh, we're not going to a bowl game." But if they can find a way to upset one team down this stretch, could it be Oklahoma this week? Could they be the team that pulls the trigger? At Oklahoma, 2:30 ABC.
Could be. I was about to be like, I don't know if that could happen, but if you saw this last weekend against Kansas, I mean, everything's up.
You needed the Kansas State game to get to a bowl game. You did, because the last four are against ranked teams. But I think there are winnable games down that stretch. Iowa State, Oklahoma State, and Baylor. Oklahoma's beatable, too. All four of those teams are beatable. I would not be shocked if Texas Tech goes bowling. And that's the first time in a long time for this team. I'm just kind of curious why you decide to make that move. You just fired your coach mid-season when you're 5-3 at a place that is not used to winning. And you're middle of the pack in the Big 12 right now. There's a lot of teams doing worse than you.
It is a bit of a head scratcher. I think Wells is 13-17 in his time at Texas Tech, which of course is not great, but that they're 5-3 now, that says he's 8-14 in the two seasons before. As far as most approved teams, though, I think you have to take a serious look at Oregon State. I mean, I'm looking at their history right now. They're 5-2 right now, sitting at first in the Pac-12 North. Last season they were 2-5.
Pause. Oregon State is first in the Pac-12 North.
Yes,
right
they
now.
Are.
What a beautiful time we're living in.
They're first in the Pac-12 North. They haven't had a winning season since 2013 when they were 7-6. And outside of 2019 when they were 5-7, they haven't won more than two games in a season in 5 years.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Go Beavers.
Go Beavers, man. Yeah, can we get a Utah-Oregon State Pac-12 championship, please?
I think they just played this past weekend.
I'm for that.
They did. Oregon State just won.
Oregon State beat them.
I want to see it again, man.
I was shocked that that wasn't on our – I didn't choose the games that we picked this week. I was shocked that that wasn't on there because that one had some Pac-12 implications, and Oregon State handled them.
Yeah.
Did it convincingly.
And then Oregon State and Oregon play at the end of the year, and it's at Oregon.
Let's get Oregon State and Arizona State in the Pac-12 championship game. That would be awesome.
Oh, hold on. Guys, the most enticing conference championship game this year will be Pittsburgh-Wake Forest in the ACC championship game,
which we're very
much so on a collision course for.
Sure, but the Pac-12 game is the second most interesting one there.
We were talking about contenders and pretenders on Friday. Jacob Hillman, Sting, and I were talking about the ACC, and we were talking about potential conference championship contenders, and we thought NC State and Wake Forest definitely had a shot. NC State lost this weekend to Miami by 1 point, so now you're looking at a
right
Wake
after
Forest.
I said that, you know, I think I can write an NC State win in Sharpie for that game.
Man,
I clearly jinxed it.
Well, hey, look, you went 12-3 in your picks, so you did something right.
Miami puts themselves with that win over NC State. They have a shot to get to a bowl game. They have winnable games down the stretch: Virginia Tech, Duke, Pittsburgh. You never know. I mean, I think pretty much every game left on the schedule is winnable, and I'm very impressed with Pittsburgh. I'm just saying the state of the ACC with Linda Handa, Miami could pull an upset, and it's all about the quarterback position. Tyler Van Dyke, he had 325 yards, four touchdowns, no interceptions on 25 for 33 passing against NC State. He came on in the Virginia game 3 weeks ago. That was the game that Miami missed a chip shot field goal wide right, I think it came off the upright. They ended up missing that field goal. Virginia ended up holding on to win. Honestly, right now, Miami should be 4-3 instead of 3-4 if they could have made that field goal against Virginia. And Tyler Van Dyke, that was the first little bit of action that he got in that ball game coming in for Derek King. He had a rough game the next week against North Carolina, had one touchdown to three picks. But you can see he's a freshman. He had a big game against NC State after a bad game against North Carolina. There may still be some inconsistencies there, but you got to say this guy's getting better. If he had the ability to erase what happened in the North Carolina game and play the way he did in the NC State game literally a week later, there's a bright spot at the quarterback position for Miami moving forward. The question is, can this team find three more wins to get to six wins? And then that also the question begs to be asked, is that enough for Manny Diaz to stay in Miami at the end of the year?
I think it's possible. I definitely think it's possible. Will it happen? I don't know if we've seen enough from Manny Diaz to truly trust his longevity with the program. So we'll just have to wait and see. I want to keep it here in the ACC, though. We're talking a little bit about Pittsburgh. What about their 27-17 win over the Clemson Tigers? I mean, they have just gone out there and proven, you know, my question heading into this matchup is look at who they've beaten this year. They lost to Western Michigan earlier in the season. They beat UMass, New Hampshire, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Tennessee. Not truly impressive. Where is that top 25 win going to come from? The answer is not on this schedule, at least in the regular season. You go and beat a Tennessee team or Clemson team now at this point, that is very much so talent-wise deserving to be in a top 25 ranking if we're basing it on talent alone. Can they go and beat a team like Clemson? And they did, beat them by 10 points.
Is this the most, I'm trying to think, I think this is the most handy win that anybody's had over Clemson yet this year.
By 10
points, yeah. Well, let's beat them better than Georgia did.
Let's take a look. Georgia won by 7. NC State won in overtime by 6. So, yeah, 10 points. Largest margin of victory over Clemson this year.
Is this the most points that Clemson's given up in a football game this year?
It is tied with NC State. They gave up 27 to NC State in 2 overtimes. They gave up 27 to Pittsburgh this past weekend.
This defense may be shorthanded, but it's still really good.
It is.
And the offense is horrible. They don't know who's playing quarterback right now. I think the way to pronounce the last name of the backup quarterback that came in, I think it's
when
like,
you sneeze.
No, I think it's Pumachan. I think that's how his last name is pronounced. But whether it's Ungalele or Pumachan, whoever's ended up at starting quarterback, it's not good for Clemson right now. Yards per attempt is low. Interceptions are coming in all over the place. They just don't have a reliable passing game. Young at the running back position as well. Clemson's offense is horrible. But something about how Pittsburgh won this football game where there was really no question, and there was questions in all of the other times that Clemson lost. Like Clemson, if you don't drop the ball before you get into the end zone against Georgia, the game might have happened differently. Like Georgia could have a loss right now. Right? Like that game could have easily gone the other way. NC State barely beat them as well. Pittsburgh handled Clemson. And sure, you've reached a point this year where you can begin to bail on Clemson as a good football team. But I still think that defense is legit, and they're still playing really hard. Pittsburgh just, I'm impressed with this team. Have they beaten anybody good, great? No. But if this team keeps winning and breaking down their schedule moving forward, it's a combined record of 20-17 down the stretch. Best team they'll have beaten down the stretch, if they do win, it would be North Carolina or Virginia. Those are teams that you're looking at with like winning records right now. If they win out, I think this offense is legit. They very well could win the ACC. This has been such a bad year in college football. You could make an argument for Pittsburgh to get into the college football playoff, and you can kind of see a pathway to it right now.
Exactly. Two things I was going to say is, you remember the time when Clemson was feeling so cocky that they put their punter in at quarterback when they were playing Georgia Tech? Now they kind of feel like they may need the punter to play quarterback because the QB position has not been playing very well so far this season. Every day also I wake up and I think, man, there's no way that Clemson could have a quarterback on roster with a longer name. And as the depth chart goes further, you're just like, well, it's a guy with 30 letters in his last name. Cool. All due respect to the kid. I wish him well. I hope he plays well. It's just it's difficult on me to try and pronounce these names because
it
I'm
is pronounced
idiot.
Pumachan.
That is a dope last name though.
Pumachan. It's on the Clemson Tigers website. So it's Tyson Pumachan.
That is a cool name. We'll not discount the name. It is cool. It's just a really long name. And also, what you were saying is Pittsburgh to the playoff potentially could be interesting there. 100%.
I definitely see a pathway to it. They've got a player putting up Heisman numbers right now with Kenny Pickett. And he did it without a ton of help on the ground in this game against Clemson, too. 3.8 yards per carry for the Panthers, and he still found a way to throw for 302 yards, 2 touchdowns, and no interceptions. He's very good. I would put him at second in the Heisman race right now behind Bryce Young. I think he's played a lot better than Matt Corral, but he also hasn't played as tough of a schedule as Matt Corral has. I think Kenny Pickett's a good quarterback, though, and I think he every bit deserves a spot in New York at the end of the year.
And also, you look at Pittsburgh's schedule again, you broke it down, but I would argue that their 3 most difficult games are at home against Miami, North Carolina, and Virginia. So there's opportunity there for Pittsburgh to make a run, but they've got to be able to continue to prove themselves in the back half of this season. Did we get to Wake Forest Army, or are we just going to make the basketball joke?
We haven't, but I want to say one thing real quick about Pittsburgh. Their lone loss of the season came to Western Michigan, who is a good MAC team, but they have to look really stinking good down these last 5 games that they've got. Mm-hmm. They got to put up style points. They got to score a lot to earn more respect, because they're sitting at 17 right now and they're 6-1. And sure, there's some other teams hovering around that spot that are 6-1 too, but those teams also haven't been getting a ton of respect this year either. And a loss to Western Michigan, if it comes down to it at the end of the year and there are 6 teams with, you know, 1 loss or 2 losses at that point, say Auburn finds a way to somehow get in there, wins the SEC championship, they got 2 losses, you got to put Auburn into the playoff. Georgia would get into the playoff, and then you're looking to find, you know, you got Oklahoma, Ohio State, Pittsburgh, and you got to take 2 out of 3 there. Good luck. And good luck being the team that gets in with a loss to Western Michigan.
Wake Forest Army basketball exhibition game, 70-56 was the final score. No, I'm kidding. This was a football game. This was a game where Sam Hartman, the Wake Forest quarterback, absolutely went off. I believe he threw for 4 touchdowns and just a 5 and just a boatload of yards. Army held on to the ball, I believe, for the majority of this game, which just tells
42 minutes and 43 seconds.
Just tells you where Wake Forest's offense is at right now.
Your top 13 features Cincinnati, Iowa, Ole Miss, Kentucky, and Wake Forest.
And if we sim a few years in the future on our NCAA 14 Army dynasty, we will see Army there as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. This, what a wild time to be a college football fan, man. Wake Forest in the top 15. They're at 13. Their offense is just going off this season. It's just going off.
They also haven't played anybody. I keep asking myself, when is Wake Forest going to lose?
I will also say it's kind of a detriment to them in terms of their playoff hopes, because it's like, will they ever play anybody at this point?
They will. The remaining schedule is Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Clemson, and Boston College.
But are they somebody? Are those teams somebody?
It's a lot better than what they have faced up to this point, and if their defense continues to play like they are, they will lose.
They have no that if they win out, they will have no wins over a top 25 opponent.
You're right. I'm not saying that they've played anybody, but I'm just saying that the teams that they're playing are better than what they have, and I definitely think there are a couple losses left on that schedule, which is really sad because we're going to end up with NC State and Pittsburgh in the ACC title game rather than Wake Forest in Pittsburgh. But Sting, you got something?
Does that mean if Pitt and Wake Forest both went out and meet in the ACC championship game, we will have a conference championship game in which neither team has beaten a top 25 opponent?
I believe so.
This is the ACC, gentlemen.
This is truly.
That's kind of awesome, but also not at all.
I think it's been a consistent theme throughout the ACC that we've been talking about for a week now. Is like, okay, these teams are finally get the good teams, so to speak, are finally getting to the back half of their schedule, and they're actually going to have to prove themselves. We're going to hopefully get some definition to the ACC, but up until this point, it's kind of been all over the place. So who knows? Some teams may go 500. Some teams may split it, go 3-2, something like that. We're just going to have to wait and see. But yeah, the ACC all over the place.
And the top 25 is crazy too. I mean, you go up and down, and I mean, think about teams that are just traditionally not in it. Cincinnati's in the top 25. Iowa, Ole Miss, Kentucky, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, Baylor, SMU, San Diego State, Iowa State, UTSA, Coastal Carolina, Brigham Young. You go back 15 years ago and you ask, is this what the top 25 looks like? No way.
No. Absolutely not. UTSA, by the way, being ranked is a beautiful thing. At SEC Media Days, random story, I had some guy sitting behind me during some press conference, and he casually made a comment. He was like, I'm just reading, and they put out some quarterbacks list, and the UTSA quarterback is ranked like something. I don't remember what he was saying. I was like, oh, yeah, Frank Harris is actually pretty good. He's like a dual threat guy. And he's like, the fact that you even know that and you know who their quarterback is shocking to me. I was like, yeah, they're going to be a good program this year. Like, they've got a shot to be decent. And would I have ever expected 8-0? No. But here we are. It's just the beauty of college football this season.
Believe it or not, 15 years ago, Wake Forest was ranked.
Oh. You pulled that up quick.
Y'all want to know what the top 25 looked like 15 years ago?
Hit me.
Compared to what we were just looking at.
Can I guess who was number one?
Go ahead.
Okay, so if this was 15 years ago.
Year is 2006.
2006. Number one,
Ohio State.
It was Ohio State.
I was going to say Ohio State.
Sure.
No, I was going to say Ohio State. I was going to say
Auburn. That was number two.
I was going to say Auburn's mixed in there somewhere.
Who are you?
Wait, what the heck?
I'm a college football historian. I remember that game.
All right, who was number
three? Number one Ohio State beat number two Michigan in a 1-2 version of the game.
All right, who was number three?
It's the big game, by the way.
Is this the Florida end of the season poll, or is this the...
This is week 9.
Wow.
Would it have been Florida?
USC.
I was going to
say... Florida was number 9.
Okay, my guess would have been USC for number 2.
USC's 3.
Where's Auburn ranked?
7.
Hey, there you go.
This was a good year. This was the Cotton Bowl year.
This was a, man, throwback. 15 years ago, Wake Forest ranked.
Wasn't it? No, that would have been after Auburn lost to Arkansas, right? Was that
Auburn
same season?
Auburn was one loss at that point.
Where Felix Jones ran all over them in the same season?
I think
season?
It was that year, or maybe it was the next season.
Is this a Brandon Cox year?
Yes.
Oh,
Brandon
yeah.
Brandon Cox.
Yeah, Brandon Cox's senior season was 2007.
I missed the lefty quarterbacks, man. Undefeated against the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Other notable teams ranked. West Virginia was 4, had 2 votes for first. Tennessee was 8. Louisville was 6. Texas was 5. USC was 3. Clemson was 10 back then. Cal was 12. Boise was 15. Rutgers was 16.
All right, that's where we end up.
18 was Boston College. This was Matt Ryan's year. Oklahoma was 19 with two losses. Nebraska was 20. Georgia Tech was 21. Wake Forest was 24, and Oregon was 25.
Man.
That was your flashback to the past, week 9. Notice how I didn't mention Georgia in those rankings.
Oh.
They were not ranked. Yep.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's head to break, and on the other side, we'll wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line. Couple minutes left here in the Monday edition of On the Line. Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you. Intern staying behind the controls. We're all just kind of shooting the bull, talking about some college football and back in the day in different AP Top 25 polls and just how wild it is to be a college football fan now with the weird teams that we are seeing strewn across the AP Top 25 poll. Wrapping up the show real quick before we get out of here. Who do y'all think are the top four teams in the country right now?
I think it's, well, now I got to go pull up the top 25 poll. I think it is Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. Forget Cincinnati.
Wow. Yep. Another one of these playoffs, huh?
Forget Cincinnati. I said right now. The I mean, things are still playoff. Can change, but I think right now that's my group. That is my group of four that I would put in at the moment.
Right now, for me, it's got to be Georgia. It's got to be Notre Dame in my number two. I'm kidding.
Hang on.
I would probably agree with Noah. But, yeah, we've got some fantastic college football coming up this weekend. Auburn playing Ole Miss. Cocktail party with Georgia, Florida. And this past weekend, we had some great college football and high school football as well, Noah.
That's right. This week's Point Broadband High School Player of the Week is Auburn High School's Clyde Pittman. The junior quarterback was perfect through the air, going 13 for 13 with 197 yards and two touchdowns. Dang. And the Tigers' 42-28 win over Enterprise. He added an additional 64 yards and a touchdown on the ground on three carries. The Tigers advanced 8-1 overall and 5-1 in the region with a home game coming up against IMG Academy this Friday. Clyde Pittman, your Point Broadband High School Player of the Week. Point Broadband, smarter, faster fiber internet. Point-Broadband.
13 of 13. How about that? Yeah, I would probably agree with you. If we're talking top four, Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, some form of that, with Georgia being at number one, I'm not too mad at.
I just think those teams at this point, maybe I would take Cincinnati over Oklahoma. I think Ohio State's turned a corner. They are massacring teams left and right, and if they destroy Penn State, which Penn State obviously did just lose to Illinois, but if they were to dominate Penn State the way that they just dominated Indiana, I think that has to say something, because Penn State still has talent.
That's going to do it for the Monday edition of On the Line. We'll see you guys tomorrow to continue to preview Auburn's huge matchup against Ole Miss. Same time, same place. You guys know where to find us.